Welcome back to Booze and Buffy, a podcast where we are watching and discussing every episode of Buffy the Vampire Slayer and Angel one by one. We will be free of spoilers from future episodes, but full spoilers on any episodes that we have talked about in the past. I'm Jason, and I was very shocked by this episode.
Rocking my leather pants and crop top, I am Harrison.
You should try that.
I should try that. I'm trying a lose a little tummy.
That's what you need. That needs to be your Halloween costume.
Gwen Raiden.
Yeah, we can be supporting Buffyverse characters. Nice.
Oh, Jason, what episode are we watching today?
We are watching Angel Season 4, Episode 2, Ground State. This is the one where we've got a little bit of everything. We got an X-Men, we got a heist.
A second heist?
Yeah, we got really angry banging by Lila and Wesley. Like, I'm pretty sure all of their bangs are angry, but this one seemed especially like, yeah. Oh, God, I hate you.
Ground State was written by Mare Smith and directed by Michael Grossman and originally aired on October 13th, 2002. Jason.
Yep.
We're not drinking wine today.
We're not. We almost did.
No, we've got some Hofbräu Maibock. It's apparently like German beer day.
Ha-ha!
Leave it to my husband to know that.
Deutsches Bier Tag.
So yeah, he went down while we were watching the episode. John went down to the liquor store and bought a pack of Maibock and a thing of Hefeweizen as well. And Jason and I went for the Maibock.
Yeah, I don't know if I've had this one, but as I told Harrison, if it's from the Hofbräu House, I haven't had a beer there that I didn't like.
Yeah. So if anyone doesn't know Hofbräu House, if you're not regionally close to us, it is a German restaurant and brewery in...
They're headquartered in Munich. The closest
closest
one to our location is in Cincinnati. Yeah.
Is it in Cincinnati? Newport. Or I was going to say, it's Newport. Like, it's on the Newport side. Yeah. So it's technically a Kentucky restaurant.
But no. But the main Hofbräu House is in Munich, and yes. I've been there.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
But yeah, I love...
It's pretty dope.
I love going to the Hofbräu House. We've been there together...
At least once.
Just the one time, or have we been there...
I think it was just on the way back from the Renaissance Fair, but... I mean, I'm down for going.
No,
we can go after the Alanis Morissette concert.
We keep... remind me when that is.
July.
Okay.
I keep telling Harrison that about Alanis Morissette and Joan Jett and the Blackhearts being at the Riverbend Music Center.
Almost certain work is going to make that impossible.
Work can go suck the big one.
Well, we've actually been wanting to plan we keep talking about it, and I think I've mentioned it to you, getting a bunch of people to do like a little Cincinnati day trip and go to the Findlay Market for lunch and
love
check
that.
Out the market.
Yeah.
It's really cool. Then go to either the aquarium or the zoo.
I've already been to two concerts in Cincinnati this year.
And then dinner at the Hofbräu House and then,
yeah,
then back home. We just need to...
Cincy's a great city.
I do like Cincy. We would go to the aquarium all the time. I know it's like a really positive memory of mine. We did that. Last time I went was right after John and I got married. We actually, one of our wedding gifts was were tickets to the Cincinnati Symphony. And we saw one of the Marsalis. I think it was Winton. I cannot remember. So yeah, we went up. We spent the night in Cincinnati. We went to the aquarium. We saw the concert. We went to Hofbräu House, and We ran into Tony Newton because he was working at the aquarium at the time.
I love that guy.
Apparently, if I go to Ohio, I'm going to run into him because we saw him at the Renaissance Fair, too.
Well, in all fairness, literally every single one of his posts on social media were about being in the Renaissance Fair. So, yeah, I love him. Love you, Tony, if you're listening.
All that is to say, I always have a good time when I go to Cincinnati. So, cheers to Cincinnati.
Yeah, why not?
The bottle would have been better.
But it drinks better out of a glass.
I know.
A little bit more malty than I expected, but it's a good beer.
It is a good beer. All right, Jason, let's take us away.
All right, well, first off, we get a very strangely shot flashback.
This is weird. I tell Jason this, but I started the episode, and I, for a moment, despite the fact that I was on an Angel play screen, and it was clearly an Angel DVD, I, for a moment, went, did I accidentally put the X-Files in?
No, it had very early X-Files feel to it.
The graininess.
And I thought, and it's probably due to the fact that I started watching Twin Peaks recently, it had a lot of Twin Peaks vibes as well. But is October 28th, 1985, which I believe is exactly 1 year before my friend Beth Giesel was born. I'm pretty sure she was 86. And this couple, Mr. and Mrs. Rayton, are taking their young daughter to a boarding school in Gills Rock, Wisconsin. It's called Thorpe's Academy. It's run by Lydia Thorpe. And all we can see of Gwen is that she is wearing a very puffy coat.
Yeah.
and thick mittens. So we meet the headmistress, Lydia Thorpe. And the reason that Gwen is allowed to stay here, most definitely the reason why, is because Gwen's parents have donated a large amount of money and some of that has been invested in special accommodations for Gwen. We don't know what the special accommodations are. Lydia says to Gwen that the number one rule is that she has to stay away from the other students. And we get this funny but sad moment where, her parents have, just gone away. And then, poor Gwen, she's like walking by this woman, tries to like hold her hand, and Lydia just bats it away. It's sad, but I also laughed at just how funny it is.
I mean, I laughed at something way worse that happens in this.
Yes,
scene,
you did.
So.
We then show a scene where, honestly, the mittens don't make sense at all.
Don't make sense at
all. Yeah, no. So poor girl is like trying to eat her lunch under a tree while the other kids are playing, and she's got a snack pack. I'm assuming it's a snack pack. It's in that snack pack esque.
Oh, yeah.
Of course, it's probably it is on TV. So if there was a label showing it all, it was like a Nosh bag or something.
Nice.
But yeah, she's got this like vanilla snack pack, and she's like trying to open it, and obviously she can't because she's wearing these really thick mittens. So she takes it off, and she takes one of her mittens off to take off the lid of the pudding, starts to try to eat, and this boy comes up and says like, "Hey, are you a freak?" And
a dick. Yeah. I mean, he actually seems like a nice boy.
It's more. He
makes
that's
a
more
bad
of
first
ignorance.
Impressions.
Yeah, that's more of ignorance than just malice.
Mm-hmm.
And she's like, "I don't know." And he says, "Like, well, you don't look like one." And he says, "Like, oh, you want this? Like, you can hold on to this if you want to." And gives her like a toy car, and so she reaches out to take it. Right as Lydia Thorpe is like, "No!" And a spark flashes from her hand. The toy car is charred. And the thing that Harrison laughed at was the young boy getting an electric shock and getting thrown to the ground.
presumably dead.
Yeah. According to the Buffy wiki, it says he's on the ground unconscious, but...
We'll see.
Yeah.
I don't... It doesn't say one way or the other. I choose to believe he's dead. I mean, wait. No, I shouldn't say that if I laughed at it.
What is wrong with you?
I'm sorry. It was just funny. It's like, I don't propose that we electrocute children.
No, no. Like, we were laughing at... We were laughing at, like, her batting the hand away. Yeah. Like, because... And I felt bad for laughing at that. And then...
It's just a little silly.
Yeah, you just lost it when that kid got the electric shock, and I like looked over you like, what the fuck?
It was just all of this was just a little goofy. So when it like culminated in this, I was like the weird way it was shot, we're shooting it at strange angles.
Yeah.
Very oversaturated lighting. Yes, we've got this like Charles Xavier School for Extraordinary Children sort of vibe happening.
Honestly, it kind of gives me more of a... Keep in mind, I've only read, like, the part where she's at the boarding school, but Jane Eyre. It felt like they were trying to go for that with the whole, like, girl being sent to a boarding school thing. Just like, oh, poor girl. Like, she's pretty much an orphan now. But... Yeah, they tried to make it really old, look really old-timey, even though it was 1985.
Right? Yeah, the choices here were odd, yeah. And even the name of the woman, Lydia Thorpe, it's like, of course her name is Lydia Thorpe. That just sounds
honestly,
like an evil headmaster like, name.
Honestly, that sounds like something that could be, See, like, I started reading Jane Eyre a couple months ago, but I got wrapped up in a lot of stuff, so...
It's a good book. I read it.
Yeah, I'm trying to, like, remember who was the headmistress that just gave her a lot of shit or something like that. But anyway, let's go to the present, because...
Yes, please.
Let's leave the oversaturated 1985. The Angel Investigations team is in Cordelia's apartment. They have packed everything up, or attempting to pack everything up, because the landlord is going to rent it, because they are kind of like, we don't know when Cordelia will be back, can't really afford to like pay her rent, which is what they tried to do for the first 2 months that Angel was gone, but they also have to like, you know, pay for all the stuff that it's involved in the Hyperion.
Right.
And we saw in the last episode that money was getting kind of rough for them anyway.
Yeah, and Miss Maria Temple, by the way,
okay,
is the superintendent of Lowood School.
Well, no, but she's the one... Isn't she the... Who's the one that's really nice to her? Because there's a
that's
teacher...
Her.
It is... Okay.
The kind... I should say, the kind superintendent.
Yeah.
Then there's Miss... Scatcherd, a sour and strict teacher.
Yeah, she's the one who gives Jane Eyre a lot of shit.
And then Mr. Brocklehurst, the clergyman, director, and treasurer.
Yeah, overall incompetent.
It's been a minute since I read that book, but it was good. I really liked it.
No, I want to get back to reading it, but I gotta finish The Crown of Swords.
Once you read it, you really also need to read, and this is a suggestion for everyone who likes books. If you like grammar humor, if you like sort of Douglas Adams-y, sort of Neil Gaiman, sort of that, in that sort of vibe of like absurdist British humor. I know Neil Gaiman's not
You're thinking more of Terry Pratchett.
Yeah, but the Thursday Next series, the first by Jasper Fjord, the first of which is The Air Affair, and... The series is follows Special Agent Thursday Next, who in this world literature is taken extremely seriously, and she is a part of a special police group that focuses on literary based crimes. And in the book, someone steals Jane Eyre from Jane Eyre.
This is starting to sound like an episode of Hysteria.
It's so good. And see, they steal her from the original manuscript, which erases her from all copies around the world. So suddenly Jane Eyre is just not in Jane Eyre anymore. And so the plot is Thursday Next trying to rescue Jane Eyre and return her to her book. And the series just gets even wilder from there. Like, one of the... Like, later, she actually learns how to go into the book world, and her partner, when she's solving literary crimes from inside the books, is... oh, fuck. What's her name? Great Expectations. The,
Oh, Mrs.,
Wedding Heaven. Dress. Miss Havendish. Heaven... Haberdashery. That's not right.
Mrs. Haberdasher?
Great Expectations.
I haven't read it. I haven't either. I only just kind of know that name.
Miss Havisham.
Havisham. Yeah. Okay.
I haven't read... I know this character from this book series. Yeah, it's a great book. It's a real fun read. And all of his books are really fun. He does a lot of, like, kind of twists on... one of his other series is the Nursery Crime series, and the first of which is a, like, noir novel solving Humpty Dumpty's murder.
Did I ever tell you about the Jane Austen murder mystery series?
This is sounding familiar.
Yeah, so I think what the author is planning on doing is to do a murder mystery that utilizes aspects of every Jane Austen novel. Mm. She's released three so far. Pride and Premeditation,
nice.
Sense and Second Degree Murder, nice. And Manslaughter Park.
Yeah,
and it's
Manchester Abbey, right?
No,
that's Northanger Abbey.
Yeah, Northanger Abbey, Mansfield Park.
Mansfield Park.
Yeah. But, yeah, the plot, I only know the plot of the first one, and it's Lizzie, what's her last name? Bennett. Lizzie, yes. Bennett. Yes, Lizzie Bennett is working
at... And her sister, Lydia.
Yes. Lizzie Bennett is working at a law firm, and she's trying to, like, make her way up, but isn't taken seriously as a woman. And then she goes up against another attorney named Mr. Darcy.
What?
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
Enemies to lovers?
Yeah, I think so.
Actually, that's not really fun.
Always dashing Mr. Darcy. Anyway, sorry for that tangent.
You know, that is, that, our tangents are usually, not that we don't go on literary tangents, like, we both like books and we like to read, but they're rarely, like, that sort of, like, romantic sort of era of novels.
Yeah. And let's talk about the Bronte sisters.
Yeah, I like to think that that just... Look how well-rounded we are as individuals.
Sure, let's go with that. Not super insane. So, yeah, they're basically at this point thinking that Cordelia isn't going to be back, and they're going to keep all of her stuff at the hotel, because there's plenty of room.
Yeah.
Angel is, like, wondering whether Phantom Dennis knows anything, and he's just... Apparently Phantom Dennis is just mad that, that, you know, where the hell is she?
We really see in this scene, and it's going to build throughout the episode, Fred snaps at Phantom Dennis when he tries to unpack one of the boxes. And
this is a rough week for Fred.
It's a rough week for Fred. She is really starting... The cracks are starting to show after everything she's been through over the summer.
Yeah. And we find out that Wesley has started his own kind of, like, separate team.
Mm-hmm.
And he's training them on how to fight demons. And this is when Angel shows up, just as they get the job done.
And he's finally a rogue demon hunter. For realsies.
He is, yeah. But I don't think that's what he wants to be.
No.
Yeah, Wesley kills the demon, he gets a motel key, and then tells his guys, like, oh, the man that this demon's been holding captive is in this room. Go get him. So this is when Angel finally, like, is able to, you know, because he's cognizant, he's able to thank Wesley, and Wesley just really doesn't say anything. So Angel tries to say, like, hey, you know, we're okay after everything that happened with us.
How sincere do you think Angel's being here? I think pretty sincere.
I think so too.
I think Wesley is right that he also has ulterior motives.
Yeah,
but
I do think that Angel sees this as the opportunity to also try to rebuild this bridge.
Mm-hmm. And I think he thinks that'll work. I think he thinks coming to him under the guise of, we're good, now we need you to help us find Cordelia.
Yeah.
I think
I do think that at this point, he would probably welcome Wesley back.
Yeah.
But Wes doesn't want to come back because Wes is not the same mm-hmm. guy that he was when he kidnapped Connor.
Yeah.
The baby.
I also think that if he weren't in this relationship with Lila, he would come back.
Mm-hmm.
So outside of the story, though, the audio in this scene was weird.
It's a weird choice because they did it in, like, this industrial, like, kind of sewer sort of thing. But, you know, there's, like, pipes and machinery. Yeah. And so that made it so that the actors had to yell at each other.
Yeah.
And so you're having this extended conversation where they're like all talking at a high volume.
Yeah.
And that's...
And I felt like Alexis Denisoff in particular sounded weird. And I do wonder if maybe his dialogue was ADR'd. Hmm. Because it just... Angels... Yes, we were talking this high volume for what was like a pretty calm conversation.
Yeah.
But Angel's voice sounded normal, other than the volume. But
right.
Alexis Denisoff sounded off. I don't know what it was.
I don't know either. And honestly, to do that at all was kind of a weird choice. Another weird choice.
Mm-hmm.
But Wes does say, like, oh, here's what you came for. So, which I think is what Wesley only thinks that Angel's there for, mm-hmm. and hands him a folder that has all of the information that that Wes was able to get on Cordelia. He doesn't think that Cordelia's dead, but she isn't in the dimension anymore, in our dimension anymore, and he couldn't go any further. He did discover that there is a goddess named Dinza, but only the dead can enter her presence and get information from mm-hmm. her. So Angel does go to Dinza's lair. And what do you think of Dinza? There are parts of the costume that I like. But the wings look a little cheap.
I liked Dinza when she was crouching. I did not like when she stood up.
Yeah, that looked weird.
And I thought, like, the wings did look cheap, but it didn't bother me much. But once she stood up, she got too human.
Yeah.
And it kind of broke the spell for me. When she was, like, crouching and doing that sort of, you know, that, and, like, the veil over her face, like, that was all working for me. But I really like the concept of Dinza. I think Angel does this really well whenever we have these, like the oracles from the first season mm-hmm. and the Loa, the big hamburger guy. Like, I love the way the show plays around with these sort of conduits to other dimensions and you know, the oracles were the sort of classic Greek sort of thing, and the Loa was this outrageous thing, and this is more of a traditional sort of monster.
Yeah, and it does kind of harken back to the detective aspect, mm-hmm. detective agency aspect of Angel.
Yeah.
Very much like, oh, I gotta follow these leads and go to the informants.
Yeah. I wish they'd done a little more with this set.
It kind of looked like the same room from I Will Remember You when after Angel gets hurt and Buffy's trying to soothe him or whatever, and I think it looked remarkably similar to that.
I was gonna say, I'd be willing to bet it's one of their sewer sets that they've added some stone to, like, to make it look more cavey.
So Dinza's asking what he wants. Like, she says that she knows where everything is, and
Everything Lost is.
Everything Lost is, thank you.
Which I thought that was a cool distinction. Yeah.
Angel asks, like,
it's like
about
a
the,
fucked
what
up
about,
St. Christopher.
What about the Lost City of Atlantis? Or the Holy Grail? Or Jimmy Hoffa? And, like, you know, nothing's like, okay, yeah, I'm looking for my friend. She's gone. Dinza says that Cordelia is far away, but doesn't need him anymore. She also knows who he is, because she knows, like, apparently word has spread about Angel Pink dumped in the bottom of the bay of Los Angeles. But Dinza does say that the way to find her is by looking inside the Axis of Pythia, which we later find out
is a dildo.
We'll get to that. But yeah, it's not really sure. It's not really clear at first what it is. If, Wes said that Angel couldn't really trust Dinza, but when Angel says, like, oh, why should I trust you when you tell me this? And she's like, well, because I'd love to keep you, but you have so much more to lose.
Mm-hmm.
Ooh, spooky. Now let's go to this restaurant where a man is sitting at a table, and in comes grown-up Gwen. Damn.
She is rocking the leather pants.
I wanted to try to enjoy this costume that she was wearing, but I couldn't because all of the other old white men in the restaurant were enjoying it as well. Yeah, it is.
Leering.
Yeah, it is. Oh, God. Like, and like, oh, gross.
So I just want to shout out real quick to Alexa Davalos, who is playing Gwen Raiden. She has so much charisma and confidence, like, immediately off the bat. I'm like, this is a ridiculous character, and I'm loving her. Like, I told Jason, I was like, she feels so far removed from the rest of this world that has been built, and I don't even mind. So, she doesn't have a, like, huge filmography, but, like, she works pretty consistently. She was in The Mist, the Stephen King film. She was in Clash of the Titans. She played Andromeda. She played a main character on the spy series, The Man in the High Castle, which I've not seen.
I've been wanting to watch that.
I have been wanting to watch that as well. I've heard it's really good. She had a small role in the second season of The Punisher, which I was like, I think I remember which character she was, and it was like, She's kind of, like, the character who sort of sets off... She's not, like... She gets killed pretty early on, but, like, her death sort of, like, kickstarts the plot.
She honestly was giving me a lot of Julia Stiles vibes.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm not just saying that because we just talked about 10 Things I Hate About You. No, I was, like, kind of thinking that. It looked like I was looking at Julia Stiles, but not really Julia Stiles.
Yeah. She's currently on FBI Most Wanted. She plays a main character on that, so...
Now, is that a spinoff of the show FBI? I
believe so.
Okay. I've lost track of procedurals and their spinoffs.
Yeah, I'm not a big procedural person, so I was like... but you know what? I bet she was making some good money on that. So yeah, I really, mm-hmm. really liked her in this role.
She has a couple of moments where it seems like her acting kind of falls flat. Particularly in the... particularly in the like the scene after Angel gets her out of the elevator, overall it's a strong performance.
Yeah. There's a weird bit after. We'll get there.
Yeah. Anyway, Gwen does walk up to. So as Harrison mentioned at the top of the episode. In a outfit he wanted to sport.
Mm-hmm.
She is wearing red leather pants, a red leather crop top, and black, like, arm-length gloves,
mm-hmm.
which we assume are leather or some non-conductive material.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, going back to her, like, trying to get the snack pack open... Why didn't they just give her rubber gloves?
Right?
Those existed in 1985.
Right?
It's not like a crazy...
They were trying to torture this poor girl.
Yeah.
They're bad people.
Lydia Thorpe sucks.
I mean, we can't blame Lydia for that. We gotta blame her parents. They showed up with the mittens.
Fair enough. But...
And nothing else. They didn't bring any change of clothes. They didn't bring any toys or books. Like... Poor girl.
Yeah.
No wonder she grew up to become a cat burglar.
she went to this crazy Lowood Academy. she says that she is she's out to steal. Hey, guess what? The Axis of Pythia. Isn't that convenient? But Elliot, the man she's stealing it for, originally told her that it was worth $6 million. It is actually has a market value of $33 million. And, she's not a fan of being lowballed like that because she wants a percentage of it.
Yeah.
And, that's her commission. And, she basically says, like, oh, yeah, I'll still get it, but you better... And he gives her, like, all the info on where to get it from. She's like, yeah, but you're going to pay me a lot more than you originally said you were. And just, like, kind of show that she's serious about it, even though Elliot, throughout the episode, says that she is not being professional and serious. She is able to steal his watch and... uses her electricity to
melt it.
Yeah, melt it pretty much. And she's like, oh, now it's surrealism.
Yes.
Which is a reference to Salvador Dali.
I love...
The Persistence of Memory, I believe, is the name of that painting. Mm-hmm.
That's a great painting. I love the... you know, we see throughout the episode, she mostly brute forces her way through the heist using her powers, as she should. But I did appreciate them establishing here with this sleight of hand getting the watch that she did not use her powers to get. She just was good at stealing things.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I appreciated that they do show us that she's a good thief.
I'm trying to think of, like, I feel like I watched something fairly recently that, like, showcased somebody being a really good thief by, like, little stuff like that. Mm-hmm. It's not Matt Damon in Ocean's 11. It's, my parents and I, we watched, the newest Mission Impossible movie, Dead Reckoning Part 1, and Hayley Atwell's character is a pickpocket.
Oh, that's so hot.
I mean, she's so hot. But, yeah, and she's very, very good at being a pickpocket. And there are, like, quite a few really good moments where she gets the better of Tom Cruise's Ethan Hunt. As with most of the Mission Impossible movies, it's just a lot of fun.
Did I tell you I watched the first one recently?
What'd you think?
I liked it. It was good.
Now...
I feel it was more understated than I expected. I feel like it was a similar... Kind of similar to the Fast and the Furious movies, where first one was a little more grounded in...
Yeah.
They just kind of escalate.
Yes, they do.
Those two.
Yeah, the first one I actually really enjoy because it did try to capture the spirit of the original TV show.
Right.
And actually a lot of people were pissed... when that movie came out.
Because the bad guy's, like, the hero.
Yeah, he's the hero of the TV show. But, it's Jim...
Jim Broadbent, right?
What?
Jim Broadbent?
No. The character's name is Jim.
Oh.
He's played by John Voight.
John Voight, that's
yeah.
right. John Voight, Jim Broadbent, same thing.
But,
not really.
But, yeah. And then the second one is kind of, like... super wacky, like how crazy it is, because it was like a John Woo film, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah.
And often looked on as like kind of the
holy shit,
kind of the black sheep of the Mission Impossible series.
I did not realize that Brian De Palma directed that first film.
Yes,
that's nuts.
And
I
then,
can see it now that I'm like looking back on
and
it.
And then like Mission Impossible 3 was the first one, I think that might be the only one that was directed by J.J. Abrams. But that kind of set the style for the rest of the series. And in all fairness to the series, it gets better and better with each movie.
Is Is Michelle Yeoh in any of the films?
No.
She's in a Bond movie.
Yeah, she's in Tomorrow Never Dies.
Yeah, because that might have been the last Bond movie that I watched was that one. I thought she was in... Oh, Tandy Wade-Newton, I think is who I was thinking of. You know, the obvious mistake to confuse Tandy Wade-Newton and Michelle Yeoh. Like, they're dead ringers.
We are going to... Yeah, the reason that I couldn't think of Mission Impossible Dead Reckoning at first was because I was only thinking of movies that I had seen for the first time, but I actually did see that in theaters. And I'm going to see the next one in theaters in 2025. So we do get a little glimpse of Cordelia in her higher plane, and she's looking down at the Hyperion Hotel, and then we get this really wonderful PowerPoint, or not even PowerPoint,
like,
it's like
chart.
Yeah, we got this like easel, like big pad on easel that Fred is trying to. She's trying to explain everything, and she says like, "Okay, so we know that the Axis of Pythia was forged from the tripod of the Delphic Oracle."
Sure,
Oracle Delphi, and. It's so funny because it's like, oh, it's got a metal arch, marble base, 2 feet high and weighing 18 pounds. And she's just got like this very just weird thing that I'm not going to lie. It looked like that award from that Jamie Lee Curtis's character had in Everything Everywhere All at Once. That's why I made the offhand comment that I made when we were watching the episode. But then Angel holds up like his... drawing pad, and it's like this very detailed drawing of what it actually is. And it's been a while since we've seen Angel's drawing prowess.
Yeah.
Obviously, we know that he is able to draw.
He usually prefers to use that skill for evil.
Yeah.
So.
Because like, obviously, the most notable being like him drawing Jenny Calendar in. Oh, God, what was the episode that she died?
Passion.
Thank you, Passion. But yes, and he also draws a really beautiful picture of Cordelia as well.
He even makes her haircut flattering.
Yeah. It's something that the stylist sure couldn't do. I'm sorry, I apologize to the hairstylist of...
I don't.
I mean, they didn't choose the haircut. They could only do what they could with it.
It's a bad haircut. I'm mad.
That's on charisma. But yes, so she says that, yeah, and Fred says, like, you know, it has the power to locate souls and entities across dimensions, and it has mystical powers, and her drawing is a little ghost with a boo on it. And at first, Gunn's super impressed by Angel's drawing. He's like, oh no, honey, I liked your little ghost thing too. That is one of the things. One of the things that I really enjoy, and this is like kind of the first scene where you get it. Even though technically you get it in the apartment scene as well. But even in the absence of Lorne, Wes, and Cordelia, this group of three, obviously minus Connor, because... Connor doesn't contribute anything.
No.
But this group of three with
mercifully...
Yeah, Angel, Gunn, and Fred is a really good team.
Yeah.
We got to see that at the end of season three before the whole Angel getting locked up in a box. But yeah, I really enjoy it. And I love Gunn. Like, you know, he gets the job done, but he also makes sure to give his girl a...
Yeah.
Give his girl some bumps and praises.
And I do like seeing... I mean, you know, it clearly has taken a toll on her. But Fred really has stepped up and become...
Which an Angel comments on.
Yeah. And I like on both hands. I like seeing that side of her. But I like them acknowledging that, like, that's not her personality type. She's not a natural leader. And... being kind of forced into that role has been really stressful on her.
Mm-hmm. Angel comments to Gunn that he thinks he's very impressed by it, but they both don't realize what that toll is. So the Axis is at Chandler's auction house, and it is being held under very tight security.
I don't know if you noticed, but in her drawing of Chandler's auction house,
she had a dog.
She had a little, I guess, like guard dog. I loved that. Because I was looking at it, I was like, what the fuck is that? And they started talking about security. I was like, oh, it's a little security.
Yeah, I did notice that. Angel's thinking and telling DeGun, like, okay, well, we'll need this stuff. And he mentions grappling hooks. And, like, suspension wires. All stuff that we simultaneously see Gwen starting to pack up as she gets ready to steal the Axis of Pythia.
She shorts out an entire computer just so she can use it as a mirror while putting on her lipstick. Also,
what a power move.
She has, like, a...
Literally.
Butch blonde assistant or something, or girlfriend maybe.
They're roommates. they only live together. That's all. Let's talk about. Let's go to Wes's apartment where Lila is trying to talk about her day while kissing Wes, and Wes is like, "I don't care." Seriously, like. As evil as this relationship is, it might actually be healthier than Spike and Buffy.
Listen. At least they're honest with each other.
They are.
Like,
all cards are on the table with them.
Oh my.
Except the ones that they want to, like, keep
to
themselves.
I love when Lila's like, oh, where'd you let your little slave girl go? And he's like, he doesn't even rise to the bait. He's like, yeah.
Yeah, she's very much aware of Justine. He says that, he's like, oh, I wonder what she heard. And he says, like, oh, the walls are soundproof, but she did say that you were impossibly loud. And then Lila gets gross because she talks about, like, first wanting to have it be an older sister to Connor so that it can benefit Wolfram and Hart. And then she's like, oh, maybe I could be a Mrs. Robinson.
Gross,
yeah. Absolutely gross. And Wes is like, just shut up. And then he goes down on her.
He says, shut up, Lila. And she goes, make me. And then he goes down on
her.
Hell yeah.
Yeah, no, I mean...
She's got his belt, like, around his neck at one point.
Yeah, she takes off his belt and then, like, bites it. And,
No, they're on the floor at this point.
Yeah, like, this is like a whole lot of kinks all in one, and they don't care because, I mean, honestly, I wouldn't necessarily say I'd want a relationship like that, but it does have its appealing aspects.
I think you could, I mean, I certainly wouldn't want a relationship like this, but I mean, there's, you know, some role play you can get into,
So then let's get to our heist. So Gwen gets under the roof of the auction house. She is able to very delicately, expose some wires and disable the security system, and she gets in. Angel, Fred, and Gunn are right behind her, and Angel very undelicately just pulls all the wires out and makes all the power go out. Then Fred's able to use a device to open up the door that Gwen just went through. She does have access to the security cameras, and she does see them in there. She's like, oh, well, this could be a problem.
Yeah, some of this was a little confusing of, like, okay, the cameras are out, but now she has access to the cameras, but the power's out, but only in this section? Like,
yeah.
Some of this heist, I was taking some logic leaps. I was like, okay, yeah, whatever.
It was more about the fact that, oh, somebody's already been here.
Yeah.
And Fred does get a hold, after she tries to disable the security system, she sees that there's been an electricity error, and she's like, I haven't even touched that yet. And she finds out, she puts it together, Angel gets a gate closed on him from the vault, and Gunn, who is looking for the armed guards, is able to take out one, but then finds four more already zip-tied. So, mm-hmm. like, oh, somebody's already here. Yeah. And
don't you hate when you're heisting and someone else is heisting as well?
Mm-hmm.
Isn't it the way?
I mean, every time.
Every time.
Of course, it does keep me out of prison.
Oh my god. Can we talk real quick about Fred's line about, like, my only plan is going to prison and becoming someone's bitch? Because I was very uncomfortable.
Yeah, we've mentioned it before that that is unfortunately a... That is unfortunately, like, a joke that gets used across media. If it's, like, it's either being used as a story device, like it was in Shawshank, and I haven't seen Oz, but I can only assume it came up in Oz frequently.
Yeah, I imagine so.
Or it gets made fun of. We were talking about Friends, how, and I remember, like, an early episode where, like, Monica and Rachel are, like, you know, in an argument, and, Monica's destroying Rachel's sweater, and Rachel's pouring marinara sauce into Monica's purse. And so Phoebe, like, you know, grabs them both by the ear and says, like, all right, you guys are going to calm down right now. And then she says, like, oh, if this were prison, you guys would be my bitches. And I'm like, yeah, that's...
It's such a... Especially in this, like, era of television. But even outside of just the grossness of the line itself... It's not a Fred line.
It's not. And I know that they meant for that to kind of show...
This harder edge.
Yeah, but it doesn't...
It's too far.
Yeah.
It goes over the line to where I'm not going... Yeah, the intention is I'm supposed to go, oh, wow, Fred's acting a little out of character. What's going on with her? But no, I'm going, Fred would never say that.
She would.
Like, that's not, like...
Yeah.
Her snapping at Dennis was me going, oh, that's a little out of character for Fred. I hope she's okay. Like, you know, there's degrees to which you can have a character act out of character that's still in character.
Mm-hmm. Gwen slides down a rope from the ceiling.
Yeah.
And that's when she sees Angel. And so she says, like, oh, she's there to steal the axis of Pythia. And Angel's like, hey, you know, there's other expensive stuff. Can you just steal that and leave the axis of Pythia? And he gets desperate and starts to say, like, you know, please. And, you know, she doesn't buy it. There is a point where she is able to move, like, all the laser motion detectors out by saying that
she has some techno babble.
Well, this is where we get the title of the episode, Ground State.
Oh yes, that's right.
Yeah, she excites the particles to a higher energy level and prevents them from going to their ground state at rest.
She has a line right after this where she's talking about, like, and I thought this was just a really cool insight that she's like, you know, I love all this high tech security stuff. Like, people feel so confident in it. And, like, for me, the more high tech your security is, the fucking better.
Yeah, like, she says this while she walks up to, like, the handprint verification pad and just, like, shocks it to open up the vault.
And that's why I think it was so important for us to see her sleight of hand with the watch, that we know that even without her powers, she could still do this.
Mm-hmm. So Fred is finally able to get the vault security down, and Angel and Gunn are able to open up the gate, because Gunn does get there as well, and he finds out, oh, hey, I only have to take out one guard. And Gwen is on her way up. Gunn grabs her first, and Gwen electrocutes him, and he falls down. Fred shows up, and Angel, like, takes his pulse and says he's dead. Commercial break.
I told Jason this as we were watching, like, the first time I watched this. Most shows, I would have been like, no, he's not. Not this show. Not a Joss Whedon show. The first time I watched it after Jenny Calendar, after Joyce, after Tara, mm-hmm. as you mentioned, after Doyle. I fully believed that they had just killed off Gunn. And I'm relieved that they didn't.
Yeah.
And I do find this a little annoying. It just feels like it's there for shock value. It does...
Ba-dum-bum!
Shit. it does pay off emotionally with the scene with Fred later, which makes me accept it. If we didn't have that scene with Fred later in the episode, I would think this killing off of Gunn was completely unnecessary. But the emotional tie-in later salvages it for me, even mm-hmm. though I think we could have just had a near-death moment for him.
I mean, at the very least, it didn't happen at the end of the episode.
Yeah.
That would have been really, like, oh yeah, you're just doing this to get people to tune in.
Yeah.
Because 24 did that once, and I'm like, really?
Mm-hmm.
But, so... After Angel says that Gunn is dead, Gwen stuns Fred and Angel, and then
she stuns Angel. She kicks Fred in the fucking face.
That's right. I mean, that's kind of a stun.
True.
Just not with electricity.
Yeah, I remember going like, damn, that was really violent.
So then Gwen. Then Gwen, like, shocks Gunn a couple more times until he starts responding. Mm-hmm. And Gwen escapes, and Angel and Fred come to and are able to take Gunn to the hospital. So Connor is just kind of, hanging out with the homeless because he has nowhere to go.
I'm so grateful that our only appearance of Connor is at a distance and silent with him sleeping on the ground.
Yeah, and Lila is basically looking at him from a distance. And then Angel just kind of pops and is like, hey, Lila. and he says, I can tell that you're, like, watching my son. I don't like that. But tell me who wants the Axis of Pythia, who's the buyer, and you know what? I'll look the other way.
This time.
Yeah, and this is when Lila says, I don't know, like, what you thought when you were in that box, but I'm still evil. I do evil things. Only evil things. She says evil like 4 or 5 times.
Yeah.
Just to get the point across. And he's like, all right. And but then he says that as he's leaving, he's like, I can smell Wesley all over you.
Mm-hmm. And vice versa.
Mm-hmm.
Which means he'd figured that out when he went to visit Wesley earlier in the episode. But chose not to say anything to him. Yeah. To Lila, well, he's like, I'll rub it in your fucking face.
I do love how you said that, as unflappable as she tries to be in front of everybody, Lila still gets flapped by Angel.
She does. I actually love that as a character trait because, yes, I love bad bitch Lila, but... Bad bitch Lila, who cannot keep that mask up when Angel threatens her, is far more interesting.
You know, I think it dates all the way back to that wine cellar.
Yeah,
She saw, like, what Angel's capable of, and, she doesn't have this, oh, I gotta be better than him attitude that Lindsay mm-hmm. has. And I think that serves her better.
Yeah.
For the most part.
She knows that if Angel truly decides that she needs to die, what the fuck is she going to do about it?
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, she's safe within the walls of Wolfram and Hart, most likely, but she can't just hide out in that building all the time.
Yeah, she was definitely kind of in the camp of, you know what, if Angel's just in that box for the rest of eternity... Fine by me. Gunn and Fred are in their room, and, Gunn is just kind of, like, having a moment with his echogram. Is that what it's called?
I thought it was a cardiogram. I don't know.
I feel like there's an echo something that involves the heart. He's looking at, like, the printout of his cardiogram. He's like, whoa, man. Isn't it crazy how these little, like, spikes are... difference between life and death. And
Fred's like, no, it fucking isn't.
Yeah. So this is when Fred actually says, like, you know, she's had to shoulder so much of keeping everything together that she can, and she's tired of it. And she was so scared when Gunn died because she's like, you left me alone. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Gunn consoles her.
Yeah. I mean, they're both really good in this scene, but, I mean, shout out to Amy Acker for...
Yeah.
Because she, like... She's being so irrational, but in the most rational way. You know what I mean? Like,
well, you know, you don't... Once emotion, especially emotion towards somebody that you truly care about, mm-hmm. comes into play, it's very hard to hold on to ration.
Yeah, yeah.
But... We then get to a hotel lobby, and Gwen sees that there's no reflection in a mirror, and so she then sees that it's Angel, and she's like, I'm going to kick your ass.
Yeah.
And they fight, and she normally doesn't do the hand-to-hand combat, but Angel's like, eh, you know, you're not too bad at it. She then takes off her gloves, and she puts her hands to his chest, and this electrical shock starts Angel's heart, and then he starts kissing her, and but then he pulls away, and the first thing he can say is Cordelia, because he's like, oh God. What do you make of this?
Okay, so like, I get it on paper.
It's really funny because when I was doing my walk earlier today, Kickstart My Heart by Motley Crue came on. So I was like, yeah! Kickstart My Heart!
I get it on paper. Angel's heart beats for the first time in 200 and something years.
Well, apart from I Will Remember You.
Yes, that's true. So his heart beats for the first time in 2 years. That's less impressive. But still, it's a notable sensation for mm-hmm. him. And I get it from Gwen's perspective. This is probably the first time she's
been able to touch somebody.
Physically touch someone in a way that not only didn't actively harm them, but was, you know, the opposite, caused life. Mm-hmm. I mean, other than just a couple hours before when she brought Gunn back to life. But still, they're both experiencing something that's really a sensation that's really significant to them and their own, you know, limitations, his as a vampire, hers with her powers. So I get in this, like, highly emotional moment that you don't expect to happen. You do something weird. But it doesn't work on screen.
It feels so out of place.
It feels so out of place. That's all me, like, digging through subtext that is really, 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 really sub. I get what they're going for, but it doesn't work for me.
I'm right there with you. Elevator door does open and Elliot is there. He says that, like, you can't really trust Gwen because she is very unprofessional. And so... he tells them that the elevator door is going to close. There's like 6 inches of plexiglass in there from any keeping Gwen from any electrical source at all. And once the doors are closed, then there's going to be some poison gas put in there. The doors do close, and Gwen almost eats it, but Angel is there to punch through the plexiglass and get the doors open.
Mm-hmm. He gets to act as like a conduit for the electricity. Yeah. I liked that.
No, that was pretty cool. And so then Gwen or Angel fights all of the security guards that Elliot has with him. Gwen comes to. She's about to kill Elliot, but Angel stops her and then just punches him out.
And she's like, I wanted to do that.
Yeah. But Gwen does think, like, oh, I guess you really do want this for that girl. And so she just lets him have it because she's not getting paid. Mm-hmm. So then, I don't know, I guess they used up all of their all their special effects budget on the on the like electricity and stuff, because Angel has the uses the Axis of Pythia behind a closed door, and yeah, all we can tell is like there's a giant bright light issuing from it.
While Gunn and Fred just watch from the other side.
Yep. Guess which side of the door the camera's on. So they're like, what do you think happened? And the door opens up, and Fred had originally asked, like, do you think he found out where Cordelia is? And when Angel walks out, Gunn says, yeah, I think I do. And he then says that he found out that Cordelia is a higher being. She's working for the powers that be. And she's in a place surrounded by light that seems to be made of pure joy. And they basically think that it doesn't look like she's ever going to be coming back. But, you know,
And that it's a good thing.
Yeah.
She's where she's supposed to be.
Yeah,
she's
fulfilling Angel her says destiny. That she's where, this is where she belongs. And, they thought, we probably should have guessed that because, you know, the whole glowing thing, of course, the powers had something to do with it. But they're like, oh, well, good for her. And we then show Cordelia once again in that light of joy. And she's like, I want to get the hell out of here.
Yeah. She says, what are you, deficient? And
this is our second episode that ends with a irascible Cordelia in the dimension that she's in.
When she said, what are you? I was so worried we were about to get a hard R.
We've gotten it before.
I thought that was cool how they do tie that in. That's, you know, we, what was her, Divna Dishka, the bat lady?
Oh, I just closed up the Buffy wiki.
Well, I like that we kind of Wesley warns Angel that, like, mm-hmm. she's untrustworthy, and we see that here. Well, and we already kind of knew this based on last week's episode, that we got half-truths with her.
Dinza.
Where, like, she tells Angel exactly what he needs to find out where she is. But she also tells her, in that dialogue, she says, like,
she tells Angel... She doesn't need you anymore.
She doesn't need you anymore. And it's like, so he's already got that in his ear anyway, so he... And then there's confirmation bias that they have of, like, yeah, Cordy's a good person. She'd been working with the powers and expanding her own abilities. Like, of course, this is the next logical step. And of course, Cordy's like, I want to fucking leave. Mm-hmm.
And again, we've had that happen for two episodes now. So something's up with Cordelia wherever she is.
Yeah.
But that is ground state. What an all over the place episode.
It's wild.
Just and so many things are tonally inconsistent, technically inconsistent.
Mm-hmm.
I like the idea of Gwen, but you know, the heist doesn't really feel like a heist.
Yeah.
I feel like we don't get to see too much of Gwen's powers. I mean, we don't get to see her just go nuts. It's more just like very controlled electricity.
Yeah.
I don't know. I wasn't feeling this episode. It more just kind of felt like moving the plot along,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
and not like having a good story in there. I like the olive branch that Angel extended to Wesley, and Wesley not taking it. But I don't know. I'm not feeling this episode.
That's where I am. Yeah, it's just all over the place. The stuff with Wesley and Lila, and Wesley's interaction with Angel, and Angel's interaction with Lila, that was all good. The stuff with Fred was really, and her emotional state was working for me. The actual plot, the meat of the episode with this heist that's barely a heist, and then just the quick resolution of it. Like, I almost feel like the heist should have been the whole episode with them working against Gwen, and then at some point having to work with her, which is what it ends up, but it's like two separate heists.
Yeah.
And I think, feel like it should have all been one thing. I think it would have been more cohesive. But I do find Gwen as a character vibrant and fun. So that at least elevates it a little, but not enough to save the episode.
Honestly, like, and I hate to repeat the point that you made.
It's a woman behaving badly, and I love it.
Well, I know that's your thing. That's your kink. I hate... It's definitely a plus that we get, like, almost no Connor. Because I mentioned how, like, in the last episode, his presence was not great.
Yeah.
Honestly, his presence hasn't been great since he's come back as an adult from Kor-Toth. But yeah, I'm going to give this episode 2 gloved hands out of 5. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm going to give it 2 little butt plugs.
All right, then. Anything else to say?
No, I will take us out.
Thank you.
Don't worry, the script you have is wrong. I fixed it on my end.
That's good.
I still had the last week's episode, same time, same place listed.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you for joining us on Booze and Buffy. We'll be back next week with Buffy Season 7, Episode 4, Help.
I need somebody. I'm Jason. You can find me on Instagram at YamiJ357.
And I'm Harrison. You can find me on Instagram at Harrison Alexander Kaufman and on Twitter at Harrison Kaufman. That's C-O-F-F-M-A-N.
And you can find us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at Booze and Buffy, or you can email us at boozeandbuffy@gmail.com. We'll take any emails you want. Just like don't say that we're shit, because that hurts my feelings. And I do not need my feelings hurt. By the way, in all those instances, the "and" is spelled out.
Yes. And don't forget to rate and review us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, etc.
Okay, so normally we like to shout out, like, nonprofits and charities. This is going to sound like an ad. I apologize if it sounds like an ad, but I do think it's... If you give me a minute, I'll make my case. So, Harrison, are you a fan of audiobooks?
I am.
Okay. So, I enjoy audiobooks as well. However, usually, kind of like the first thing you think of when you think of audiobooks is Audible.
Mm-hmm.
Which is owned by Amazon, which does kind of shitty things for all those involved with the process, much more than I know of. I know that, like, Brandon Sanderson, the famous fantasy author, has, like, tried to tackle some of that. But it's also Amazon, so it's the biggest platform for audiobooks. However, there is a service with an accompanying app called Libro.fm. That's F as in female and M as in male. That's cool how that worked out. And then Libro. And this is a service that is similar to Audible, in that you can get a subscription for $15 a month, and that gets you a credit for any audiobook that they have in their catalog. And you also get 30% off of all the buying additional audiobooks. Great thing about them, though, is that when you set up your subscription, set up your account, every purchase that you make, whether it be paying for your monthly subscription or buying an audiobook a la carte, you actually get to designate a local bookstore.
Oh, wow.
That gets a portion of that.
I love that.
And you can search based on your zip code. I actually picked Butcher Cabin Books.
Lovely. Yes. A local independent horror-themed bookstore.
Yes, I really love them. You know, they're that little bookshop that could. I'm like, mm-hmm. And I've mentioned before how it's such a cool thing to have in Louisville, because it seems like something that would be like in a small town, but maybe nowhere else. Or maybe, like, you know, in a, like, little borough of New York.
Yeah.
But, yeah, but Carmichael's was also an option. There were other options as well, but I don't remember them off the top of my head. But, yeah, and like I said, you can search this by zip code, so you can pick whichever one you want.
Nice. That's and, really cool.
So, yeah, so I was honestly, like, I usually try to... Now, I'll admit, I do buy books from Barnes & Noble and other like kind of big stores, but I also try to buy books from local stores as well, like Carmichael's and Butcher Cabin books. But you know, audiobooks is like, how can I, if I like get audiobooks, how does that contribute to local stores? This is how.
That's really Libro.fm.
So we are not getting any, like, we're not getting like any assistance from them for saying this. This is literally just me saying, hey, I thought this was cool. It helps out local businesses. Have at it.
I love that. Thank you, Jason.
You're welcome.
All right. Well, as always, go slay.
And be gay.
Bye.
Bye.